Hello, Mzansi. You are listening to Farmers Inside Track, proudly brought to you by Food for Mzansi. My name is Patricia Tembo, and today we will be exploring silviculture and pecan nut farming. This episode is set to be informative and practical as we welcome Richard Ball, who is a seasoned farmer currently cultivating pecan trees in Limpopo. He is also an agricultural consultant who works closely with farmers, things like farm management. Richard Ball, welcome to Farmers Inside Track. We're very pleased to have you.
Thank you very much, Patricia, and thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it.
I'm very excited to speak to you and for you to share your knowledge that you have. For our farmers listening, we have farmers who are often starting out, so I know you just have very valuable information that you'll be sharing on the topic of pecan nut farming. But for farmers who don't know you, maybe if you could just give yourself a brief background, what you do in the agri space.
I live in Limpopo in Makadu area. I've got a small piece of property and I was looking at what development. I've tried all sorts of different aspects, you know, the tree of life, and something said a tree, and been pushing it for 15, 18 years. And eventually I've got into pecan nut farming and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I've got nearly 360 trees at the moment. And I'm hoping to get it to 450 or even more. I'm going to grow slowly.
Wonderful. Almost 20 years of experience. I just know this episode is going to be very, very, very insightful. So you are currently cultivating pecan trees, but what are the first steps you would say as a beginner that they need when considering this form of farming, pecan farming, and the land use considerations that come with it?
Of course, you need your piece of land. You need the willpower. You have to have the want. You need that desire to want to grow the trees. You know, I was always thinking and talking to a lot of very, very clever people, and they just confused me a lot. And eventually I spoke to this one chap in Bloemfontein. He was on the internet and selling pecan trees. And I said, well, let me try. And I phoned the chap and to talk about him. And I said, yes, you know, I'm very interested in pecan. I want to plant them. I've wanted to plant them for a long time, but it's so involved, you know, to do soil samples and test that. And the others say you must dig the hole and you must put bone meal and you put so much this other compost and you put. I said, you know, I'm scared of planting these pecan trees. He said to me, let me tell you something. I said, I'm ready to hear. He said he bought a small piece of property outside Bloemfontein and there are no trees. And he went to the nursery and wanted to buy some trees to plant around because Bloemfontein has got nothing. It's just got grass. And to plant trees, and a lot of the people in Bloemfontein plant, I don't know what kind of tree it is, for timber, that at a later stage, he can sell it as timber planks or something. It's valuable timber. And while he was going through the nursery, he said to the lady, what is this? She says, that's a pecan tree. He says, I will much rather plant a pecan tree. Will they grow here? She said, yes. He says, no, I will plant a tree because it is food. I don't want a plank. I want food. I want something to pick. I don't want to just look at the trees and look at the planks getting fat and then cut them down and to try and make something. So I said, yeah, and he says that's what he did. He went and bought a whole lot of them and planted them around his place. They did so well, he got a whole lot more. And then he started cultivating his own trees. And after cultivating his own trees, he planted his whole 10 hectares with trees. He was harvesting because it was few years. He started harvesting, he got money, and he planted all those trees. I said, but that's fantastic. You planted all these trees. Did you put that compost and did you put that bone meal? Did you have your soil tested? He says, grow a gat and plant die boom. Dig the hole and plant the tree. Stop being pathetic. All I can say is when you dig the hole, make mud inside there and make sure that there's mud. There's no air. Plant the tree like you plant a tree and you will see. And I said, serious? Well, he says, and you know what? I listened to his advice and I planted trees. Since then, of course, I learned and he told me a few things. Pecan trees don't get pollinated by bees. They get pollinated by another tree. The pollen flies in the air. So there's some that pollinate, this kind of tree pollinates that tree, and that tree pollinates this tree. But the Ulinga tree, which was developed by Professor Ulinga down in Natal at the university there many years ago, which is a self-pollinating tree, so it has the male and female flowers, they pollinate themselves. He designed that tree for Africa. It has got a little bit harder nutshell. You know, when you bite it, it cracks, you know, clunks. It's a little bit harder. You can still, that's a Ulinga. And why he designed it with a harder nutshell was it is more resistant to diseases and funguses and stuff like that, that grow in a more humid area, more adaptable for pests and stuff like that than the other varieties. So I got from him, which is a variety called Wichita, which is a very prolific bearer. And then I realized something and I planted them. And then I started realizing that you need to get proper trees from a proper growers association.
That's important to know. That's the first steps when it comes to planting a pecan tree, sourcing from the correct place.
What you need to do is dig a hole, get the right tree and plant it and give it some water. Like a child, when it's born, you have to give it water and food. A tree, you have to give it water and it will grow and it will give you nuts, especially if you buy a registered tree that has been grafted. When they graft, you get a prolific growing tree. They graft it with one that branch that is giving good production. And that's what I can give that advice to on what tree you plant.
You know, gathering from what you've shared, it's important then for farmers to have the trees that are specifically bred for farming. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you maybe have examples of grower associations that you know of in South Africa?
Yes, because then later I got hold of a gentleman, Ivan. He's from SAPA, and SAPA is the South African Pecan Association. So I went straight to the top people and spoke, and I got further advice. Like I said to him, I queried on prices of trees. He says, Richard, you have to be very careful. You can go and buy trees from anybody or a nursery that plants a seed and they grow. That tree might never ever produce, or it might take 10 years to produce. And as you see in those photos that I've shown you, my 2-year-old trees are producing nuts. And those trees that I bought from Bloemfontein, from that gentleman, they were all grafted with a Pacific, which was Wichita, which he grafted them. He does not sell trees anymore. He was not a registered grower. So there were some which I have regrafted, which is back onto the right standard. So those were my first 60. And thank goodness that gentleman did a very, very good job. And I think there was two of them that maybe were grafted that were not good, you know. You could see the leaf color. It's not the same variety. It's not. So I grafted them back to the same variety. It's very important that when you get a SAPA Growers Association, that you get your tree from the right association, they are liable that that is the right tree. So if you buy a Ulinga, it will be a Ulinga. Those trees are color-coded. At the bottom, they paint a yellow strip around the bottom of the tree or an orange strip. So there's different color codes on those trees. And you know that you are getting a good tree, which will be able to produce good fruit, good nuts. That's very, very important.
You know, you touched on varieties. I know you have cultivated 4 varieties, but you know, for farmers listening, which varieties would you recommend? Maybe speaking to climate. So for example, in Limpopo, there are varieties more suited for this region. So maybe if you could just expand a little bit on varieties.
Okay. Let's go to the varieties. I've taken on knowledge, which I've listened to a lot of people. And if you're in a high moisture area and it's very humid, like Toyando, Elim, and those areas, you need to plant Ulinga. Where there are diseases, a lot of other nut trees, you know, in a high performance nut area, because you get a stink bug which bites those nuts. And if you open some of those nuts, you'll see they've gone all funny color, dark brown and stuff like that. And that's the stink bug that bites it. Then you have to spray a lot of medicine. But if you're in a drier area, you know, they're planting a lot at Tabazimbi, Polokwane, for example, all down that way where it's drier air. You can go to the thinner skinned varieties. And you are talking the Wichita, the Choctaw. A Choctaw is a very big nut, but they don't produce a lot of nuts. And the Navo as well, it's a nice big nut. They're not high producers. But as soon as you get to a Wichita, it has a lot of nuts, smaller, but a lot of them. It's a high producing tree. And the skin of a Wichita is quite a bit harder than the Choctaw or the Navo. The Navo is a thinner skin, which works good in the factories and stuff like that. Still, the best is Yukalinga. Yukalinga, you are guaranteed. And even when I spoke to Yvonne of SAPA, he said, Richard, I recommend you plant Yukalinga. But he was not sure on my location, although I told him, but he thought I was a very humid in the Lutrechod area, where I'm out towards Bandeleerkop, where it's a lot drier. And that's why I've planted a lot of Yukalingas. So I plant three rows of Wichita, and then I plant a row of Yukalinga. You can plant one or two rows of Yukalinga and then back Wichita. The reason why you plant Yukalinga and Wichita, the Yukalinga flowers a little bit earlier than the Wichita. In other words, that flower is already blooming and it's ready to take, the female's blooming, she's ready to take the male. Then the male comes in, it blooms, the pollen flies over, you get a much higher nut yield by having one tree the same kind, because that same kind, the flower is ready for the man, but the man's not ready for the woman. So now a person can understand it a lot clearer. When you've got your other variety, it's already, the flower's blooming, the other variety is coming out, it's shooting pollen, and then all of a sudden the other one, the female, absorbs it, because the female flower is what absorbs the pollen. And then she produces the nut. Yeah. On a nut tree, you will get a lot of long pollen. It's the male flower and there's the female flower. So the male flowers, it shoots its pollen and the female's still sitting there, and then the female's ready. Oh, too late. Bust the bust, my friend. That's very important to understand in nut farming, because you're going to have the one nut, the one variety. And all the males, they say, oh, it's a beautiful day. Poof, they all ready. They shoot their flowers, shoot their pollen around, but the females aren't ready. That's where the Yukalinga and the Wichita work together with each other. So they are a little bit later and the others are a little bit earlier, so that that male flower is nicely developed and the female flower is just opening up, getting ready. And here the male pollen comes, poofs, and she catches it. And then it becomes prolific nut bearer. And that's why you need your two varieties. Yukalinga does do it, but if you understand what I'm saying, it's always good to have one or two. If you're in a humid area, I would say go to Yukalinga with Wichita. So you put more Yukalinga with a row of Wichita, so they complement each other.
Timing is very important. Maybe farmers who are listening would be curious to know, when it comes to planting the actual seed or the tree, is there a specific season that you would recommend planting it, and also to get the timing right between the two varieties as you recommended?
Once you've decided, you know, you can say varieties, you can get the clever men and they will tell you this and tell you that. That's why Professor Yukalinga designed that tree and made it so that it's for Africa. It's made in Africa. The other nut trees come from America, the other varieties. They're from America. They're not as hardy. I can say you start with Yukalingas with maybe Wichita, which is a prolific breeder, just to bring the two differences in. Like what I did, I planted Navos. I planted five Navos and five The Choctaws are growing like crazy, the Navos aren't. I've realized myself which is growing, and no scientist can tell me, because they said Navo will grow very well there, but they are not. So you can see some areas where your Navos are growing well, and then you plant further down. Navos aren't doing well, then you go to Choctaw. Your soil varieties change. It's up to there. But I think for a person starting, you start on that. 90% of farming nuts or doing anything is to start. Dig the holes, work it out, draw your lines, have a plan. That's one thing. You have to have a plan. You have to have a plan. And that your plan is, one day when I get to down there, where's my pipeline going to run? How am I going to plan it? You have to plan it, not for now, but for in the future down the road. So you plan, you get it on a piece of paper, you look at your piece of property, where your water is, how are you going to start? Because the trees, you plant them 10 meters apart. And you preferably want them in a line so that you know this line is this variety, that line is that variety. It's not necessary, but when you're selling them and picking them up, you can't go and sell them and say this is Coca-Cola, meanwhile that is Fanta. Because the factories set their machines for a harder crack or a softer crack, and for a bigger size and a smaller size, so that you have to know these trees are Eucalinga, so that when you're selling them to a person, you can say this is 100 kilos of Eucalinga, not nuts. They want to know this is Eucalinga, this is Choctaw, because their color variance, their tastes change. So that is important. You need to have a plan, draw your plan out, and sit there and say, that's where I'm going to go. You don't have to put your piping. You don't have to put the piping all the way to the end. You just start. And you start your few rows, put in a few piping, because later on, you are going to put a big pipe. Then you are going to do the job properly. Once your foundation is down and proper and you know what you're doing, do like what I did. Start on 60 trees, but have a plan. I've actually got a plan for, it's nearly 800 trees. I've got my plan of where my white water main line is going to run. It's planned. It's even. This side, that side for my irrigation, it's worked out. I am not there yet. I am halfway, but I will get there. And what I've got now, and it will be able to grow me. If I'd listened to those wise men and your irrigation, and I would still not have planted a tree. You want to go and do market research, go and do market research and find out your pumps and find out your trees. Patricia, you're not going to plant trees. You know, you must realize when you plant a tree, it takes 4 years to grow. The market has changed in 4 years, but you know what I'm growing? I'm growing food. I'm growing a nut. That nut, children can eat. It's not a thing that I'm picking now and next month I'm sitting with truckloads of nuts. From when you've got nuts, you've got money in your pocket. I can take a bucket of nuts. I can sell them on the street corner. I can sell them. I can sit and crack them. I can sell them to a cafe owner. I can sell them to my neighbor. If I was looking at market, I'm not developing 3,000 hectares of nuts. And I don't think anybody that's listening here wants to develop 3,000 hectares of nuts, because he's going to need 300 million. So the basics is have a plan, and nuts will take you through, because nuts does not take heavy labor. It does not take your time. A tree grows, you've got 4 years. I'm starting to pick nuts now after 3 years. Other trees are 2 years old. I'm starting to pick nuts. And as you grow and your finances grow, you can invest and extend your nut growing. Some people go and plant their nut trees 8 meters apart so they can plant more trees in a smaller area. But then one day, one of the trees have to come out, which is fair enough. But I don't want to do that. The measurement is 10 by 10. So each tree will get good fresh air, sunlight all around it, and it will not pick up funguses, diseases, because each one's pulling its own sun, pulling, and it's getting healthy. Tree needs air. They plant them too close that everything is just close. Eventually, you just get funguses, you get bugs. They're all fighting for sunlight. And that's why the initial thing for a pecan tree is 10 by 10, and it can grow for 80 years. You're thinking, when you're planting a nut tree, you are planting a legacy. And most farmers, that's what they want. They want a legacy. It's no use doing that work. If you don't want a legacy, plant spinach. And when you finish planting all that spinach and maybe bugs ate it or there wasn't a market for it, you've lost that money. It's gone. But a nut tree, if you look after it, it's going to look after you in the long run. And you will never, ever be sorry.
I like philosophy you're touching on because it's quite different from what guests we've had before on Fruit Form Zanzi who, you know, recommend market research and finding the quickest ways to make profits and all of that. I think this is a very fresh perspective that you have. And I think this thing will find it very valuable, really. Because, you know, with spinach, as you said, maize is a cash crop and people, you know, run to those, you know, pull their wallets. But it sounds like tree farming is definitely a long-term investment. And, you know, it's for the long game, something you do.
It is the long game. And I mean, if you're going to go and plant 2 hectares of spinach, yes, you're going to need your market research. And you not even your market research. Your market research, honestly, is good for nothing. Because when you've got the spinach, the school that's going to buy the spinach has closed because it's school holidays. And now you sit with the spinach where you had a market supplying to the school. Mm. So then you say, okay, now I'm not supplying to the school. You know, I've had friends that were sending because I was doing sweet potatoes and everything before. That was sending to the vegetable market. Though he had his market research and everything and he was planting, and then he was losing money. He had to pay them to get rid of the stuff. He was losing money. But then the market picks up and everybody wants to eat sweet potatoes. Then he makes a bit of money. So as much as you can do all your market research on pecan nuts, it's going to swap and change. But a nice thing of a pecan nut or a macadamia nut, when they're sitting there drying, you've got months. You pick spinach, you have to sell it now. If you're growing green mealies, 1 hectare of green mealies, I always go and buy gocha de chikoris here, you know, roasted mealies. Every day I'd buy myself 2 mealies. Now I don't buy anymore because, they're hard, huh? So when it was good and they were soft, I was buying myself. Now I'm not buying them and he's still selling them. But they're hard. I'm not enjoying them. So as his market was going, he planted too many mealies. He should have planted just a little bit and rather sold out and planted little patches, little patch, a little patch, a little patch instead of a big patch. So now all that person who was doing those green mealies is sitting. Now he's going to have to wait for them to dry. He can't plant a new patch because he has to wait for them to dry that he can send them to the chagayon or keep it for food for the chickens or whatever. Instead of planting a little, he would have been selling fresh green mealies. You know yourself, you don't want a dry mealie. It's not pleasant. But a roasted, fresh, soft mealie, yeah. You have to get that balance. So with your nut trees, it's going to give you so much time because the first year they're producing, you are going to eat them. Your uncles, your aunts, your family are going to be sharing from your first fruits. Then when you get later, you will have enough to share and then start selling to either the marketeers, the street vendors, or you cracking them yourself and taking them to the local spa or cafe, and you will sell them. You will sell them. There's a demand for nuts. It's high protein. It's got oils in it. It's healthy. You can take them to make little packets and the kids at school will buy them. And of course, when you start in dealing a truckload of nuts and then you found out, down the road, they've opened a nut factory. Then you can take them there. You're not going to plant trees because the market is going to scare you and you must not be scared. Be positive. Plant those nuts. You will sell your nuts. I'm telling you, you will sell them. And by the time you've got a bucky load of nuts, you've got time to gather them. They're drying. You put them in bags. You keep them dry. You've got a few months to take them to a nutcracker. There's all over the country, there's depots. The more people that are planting nuts. Now, in Lutjegord, I believe they've got a depot where I can phone them and they will pick them up. And when it gets to the factory, they will take a sample and they will pay me accordingly.
Thank you for that advice as well. I think it's very important. You mentioned the stink bug. What sort of diseases and pests should farmers then look out for once they've started?
You don't have to really look out. You've got that time for the tree to grow. You see if there's a problem on your leaf, you take it to the local co-op and stuff like that, and they will advise you what to do. You don't have to worry about that. You know, people worry too much. I hear you. I do agree, but I do say there is the stink bug, and in your area where you are, they've got the agricultural people that will help you. And I can't give that advice and say, be careful of this one now and believe that is what is going to happen, because maybe I will never have that problem. That problem only occurs somewhere else. And people worry too much. It will all come at the right time.
I know that you have livestock grazing around the trees you've planted, which is really wonderful, you know, when you look at sustainability and permaculture. So maybe if you can share your tips on that and how to maximize the sustainability aspect of pecan farming.
The reason is why I've got the sheep is to graze the grass around the nut trees. And then I collect their fertilizer, their manure, to put around the trees. I don't want to put any chemicals down. I want to keep them natural, so that they are natural and everything like that. And natural compost, natural fertilizer is the most important thing. So I'm using the sheep. And of course, the sheep are making me money. I'm selling the sheep. I'm eating good meat. I use the Pedi sheep because it's indigenous and it's actually a grass eater. So they eat more grass. The other sheep I find they want to eat the bark of the trees, where the Pedi don't do that. So they graze. I'm using their manure and I put around the trees, and that's how I'm growing. My sheep are growing, my trees are growing, and that's how I'm extending it. You know, you go to one very affluent avo farmer came to me and he, but this, that. He says, your trees have to, and he went to the tree and he dug at the tree next to the tree. There were earthworms. He says, wow, now you've got it right. It's those earthworms. That means the system is right. There's no chemicals. The earthworms, my trees are happy. It's something very easy. It's not complicated at all. You have to just start and get it going and start. That is all that has to happen, is you have to plan your holes, you dig them nice, make sure they're planted properly with a lot of water in there, make a bed around them and give them water. It's as easy as that. You know, clever people, I respect them highly. And it is very, very important when you are a big farm, when you are farming big and stuff like that. Our NTKs and our guys, they are so good. You've got a problem with your sheep, go and talk to the local vet at the NTK. I go to the NTK. There's a chap there, veterinarian. That is fantastic. The knowledge that he gives me. Before I did sheep, there was all these things. You must this and you must that and you must build a trough. They must walk through dip and they must and they must. You know what I did? Eventually, I stopped all this. I just put a crawl and I put some sheep in. Do not be afraid to ask. You know, advice is always there. All you have to do is ask, and don't get too complicated. People are complicating the whole thing. It's very simple. You know, God made trees. These trees out here in the bush, was it measured? Do they? No, man, they just grow. It's a nature thing. Look after that thing and it will grow. Pecan nuts love frost where it is cold. They want that cold. They want it. The nala, it must be freezing cold. They like that frost. it makes a pecan tree grow, because a pecan tree is like a peach tree. It loses all its leaves in winter, and then in spring, when you see the flowers are coming, you know, on a peach tree, give it water. So in spring, of course, if you've got a young tree, give it water all the way through, but it will not grow until spring comes. When spring comes, give it water, give it food. The more water, the more it grows. It's just absolutely unbelievable. It just grows. It's nature. And if you are thinking the way farm natural, just get some sheep and put some sheep manure around it, or from your chicken run. There's some of the farmers now that he's starting, and he's putting chickens between his trees and ducks. A friend of mine, Sufeli, we were discussing ducks, pecan ducks. You put them and you put a chicken run, you close them up. They go around, they eat the grasshoppers, the bugs that are. I landed up one time, there was like these big green, not those grasshoppers that you can eat, those ones that stink, the terrible ones, red, and they were eating. So I didn't know what to do. I'd go and pull them off. And then eventually I went to the NTK, I went to the guy, I said, hey, these things. They say, oh, that's one, spatum. And that's what I did. Those grasshoppers, I've never had them in my 25 years being on my property there. I've never had them. But last year they came out in the million. So I dealt with it. Then eventually I was just putting some stuff around the tree. I painted it with a bit of white and a bit of disinfectant. And they wouldn't climb the trees. They'd get there, they'd say, smelling. They wouldn't climb the trees because those grasshoppers can't fly. They're big, fat things. It's easy. You just have to want to start and plan your thing. Plan to go big and start. And you will see when you start, it is amazing how you receive knowledge and how the thing grows.
How you mentioned integrating small livestock with the trees that you're planting. And the term, I believe, is called syntropic farming. And it's something, you know, that's slowly coming into the picture, farmers adopting it. And I love that you're touching on it now because it's just very good for soil, as you've mentioned. But in our earlier conversations, I liked how you say for farmers not to farm against nature, but to go with nature. I love that point that you're making now as well, as you were explaining the reason why you have sheep grazing around the tree. Yeah.
Around the trees, you put a fence to look after it because cattle will eat them. So now you've put a fence. If you put goats inside, they're going to eat your trees. So let me work together what can eat the grass in there and that can work together that I gain. You know, it's no use trying to swim up a river. If you want to cross a river, don't cross up. Cross down and go with the water. Work with nature, and nature will work with you. Nature itself will lift you up if you lift nature up. You throw a stone in the air, it's going to fall down. Work with nature, and you will see nature will look after you.
I love that. I really do. Do you have any closing thoughts, maybe last advice that you would like to share with farmers? From your years of experience, mistakes that you've maybe seen farmers do that you would like to speak on?
What I've seen farmers do is they take land, they plow it. There's just a soil erosion. It just all washes down. They don't care. They eat the soil short term and they leave no legacy. And erosion is one of the saddest things. You know, I was listening to the radio. The Paul Dam is full and it's flooding, which is lovely. Let's just think how many people's lands are in the bottom of that dam. All that diesel that they plowed up and they plowed it and they didn't do proper contours. All those lands, fields are washed and they're sitting in the bottom of the Vol Dam for the legacy of our children having no water. It's going to be full of. We as farmers, we must look after the soil. We must not let that soil that you're working so hard blow away with the wind, because you are not looking after that soil. That soil will not look after you. Look after that soil. Cherish it like a good woman. Look after it. And I tell you, till the day you die, it will look after you. That is farming. And I've seen it again, the way we plow, the way the contours, the erosion, people are not caring. They're thinking of now, only now. You use a woman only for now, you die a lonely man. And the ground is the same. Yeah. When you want to plow it, look after it, cherish it, and it will look after you. It will make you very wealthy and your great-grandchildren, because otherwise we just become like the Saudi Arabia, like a desert. They say there's lots more underneath. I'm sorry. That one underneath is dead. It has got no leaves, compost and stuff in there. That one that is washed away, you have to start from new to build that soil up. And all of us can start looking after our soil. Whatever we are doing, it will look after us. You respect that soil will respect you. Plant that tree. You will see what soil does for you. The soil is waiting for a tree. That's why there are so many trees. Trees make shade. It makes the soil healthy, and it gives nuts and it gives fruit. Any fruit tree is all good. Just remember one thing. 90% of the job is start. Don't talk too much. Do it.
Thank you so much to Richard Ball. For more on this topic, you can visit www.fruitformzanzi.co.za. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Patricia Temple, our technical producer, Megan van der Vent, and the rest of hashtag team. Fruitform Zanzi, thank you for listening.